Hello and welcome to this week's Oxcast Extra. I'm here with Chris Parkin, the Lead Educational Officer of the Museum of the History of Science. Hello, Chris.
Hello.
So, can you tell me a bit about the history of the museum?
So, this is one of the four museums at the University of Oxford, and I think to many people it's the hidden gem, I might say, because it's the lesser known and the smallest of the university museums, but by no means the least significant, because we have a world-class collection of scientific instruments going right back, in some cases, as much as 1,000 years, some of our early Islamic instruments, for example. And so we're housed also in a very special building, a historic building, because it's a 17th century building, sort of fine central location, and it was the original site of the Ashmolean Museum. So some people refer to this as the old Ashmolean building. The Ashmolean Museum started in 1683, and it was housed in the top, what is now the top gallery of this museum. And at the same time, in the 17th century, was one of the first purpose-built science laboratories in the country, a chemical laboratory, which was what is now the basement gallery. So it has a fine history, the building in itself. Well, the Museum of the History of Science, as it's rather grandly titled, was founded in 1924, when a man called Lewis Evans, who was an industrialist and a great enthusiast for scientific instruments and a collector of them, gave his collection to the university. That became the core collection of the Museum of the History of Science, as it were, the founding collection, if you like. Since then, it's been added to from other places, such as the Royal Astronomical Society, the Royal Microscopical Society, various other sort of collections, the Marconi collection most recently, from the Marconi Corporation. And like most museums, it has grown in this way, a sort of aggregation of other collections of instruments from other sources.
Fantastic. And has the sort of definition of what is science changed over the course of history?
It might be a puzzle to some people when they come to the museum, because it's called the Museum of the History of Science, that you have great expectations that you'll be told stories about the history of science. And that is indeed what we attempt to do in much of our live programming. We try to do that, and we read through the objects in the collection, some of those narratives. But of course, it's not always easy to do that in an entirely coherent way, because this is a collection of objects which are partly displayed in a sort of typological fashion, a little bit like the Pitt Rivers Museum.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's unusual for museums to display their items in that way. Usually it's chronological,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, indeed. So you'll find, you know, collections of globes, collections of astrolabes, electrical instruments, and so on. So as I say, our live programming and our program of special exhibitions is very often the way in which we try and draw out those stories and make a little bit more sort of a narrative sense of the history of science. But to answer your question about has science changed through history, I mean, the answer's got to be surely yes. I think that what we do have at the museum is a fabulous collection, particularly from the 16th and the 17th century, which is a really key point in the history of science, when science was beginning to shape up its methodology into what might be recognisable in its modern form as science. So we have, for example, the key players in the Royal Society, the first professional society of science in England, which was established in 1660, and people like Robert Boyle and Robert Hooke and Christopher Wren, familiar names in the history of science, they congregated in Oxford in the middle of the 17th century and formed a philosophical society in which they were debating much of the types of methodology that we now take for granted in science. The sort of Baconian approach, in which you observe things empirically, you then begin to draw out hypotheses, and then you test those hypotheses, and so on. And what we think of as being modern science is a much more elaborate version of that, an elaborate version where communities of scientists communicate with each other, testing, coming up with new hypotheses, new ideas, and so on. And that's very much a modern phenomenon. It's a phenomenon of the last 400 to 500 years, essentially.
Brilliant. By trade, are you a historian or a scientist, do you say?
A bit of both, I suppose, really. I've sort of... I started off studying physical sciences at university. I studied chemistry and physics, and then I taught science in schools. But then since I've gone on to postgraduate study in education, in science communication, and latterly in Renaissance science, which, if you like, is my way of pretending to be a historian.
Yes.
Yes.
Great. So you've already briefly mentioned your sort of live programmes. What have you got planned for Easter?
Well, one of the most exciting, perhaps better known, objects that we have on display in the museum, down in the basement, is very unassuming when you first look at it. It is simply a blackboard hanging at one end of the basement gallery. But what's, of course, very special about it is the person who wrote on this blackboard, which is Albert Einstein, who, when he came to Oxford in 1931 to give a lecture about cosmology, and he was something of a celebrity scientist at the time, even though not so many people could understand what he was trying to say, he gave this lecture, and the last blackboard upon which he wrote in this lecture was preserved for posterity and has been deposited at the museum. So it's displayed there with Einstein's writing, as I say, the last part of this lecture. And he is applying his relativity theory to the great puzzle of the expanding universe, as had been observed in the late 1920s. So that's our excuse for the Easter Trail, which is Einstein's Easter Trail. Our Easter trails are often very popular. You come and help yourself to the trail and puzzle out the subject matter and see how you get on. Famously, Albert Einstein said, logic will get you from A to B, but imagination will take you everywhere. Museums are places of imagination, so do come and try the Easter Trail, because it will take you on a journey of imagination as much as logic and mathematics.
Sounds very intriguing. What's your favourite item in the museum?
I think one of my favourite, or perhaps most intriguing, objects in the museum is an object which actually appears on the trail, so perhaps I oughtn't to say too much about it. It's called the Holy Table. Now, it's a puzzling object in one sense. You might ask, what's it doing in a museum of the history of science? Mm. And it belonged to a man called John Dee, who was a famous mathematician in the Elizabethan period. He was a great scholar and made his way into court circles, so he was an advisor to Queen Elizabeth I, but he was also unusual and perhaps represented the sort of cusp between the pre-scientific age, if you like, and what we think of as being the modern scientific era. He had a great interest in the darker, more magical side, if you like, of astrology and natural magic and numerology and alchemy. So he was an alchemist as well, and he became quite famous as an alchemist as well. So John Dee's Holy Table is a very intriguing object, partly informed by mathematics, but also partly informed by a very strange project in which he and an accomplice called Edward Kelly attempted a project by which they would communicate with the angels to discover something of the secrets of the universe. So come and have a look at this, because this is on the trail, and it represents a rather interesting counterpart to Einstein's take on the universe.
Wow, that sounds fascinating. What else have you got planned for the future?
So we've got lots of new projects coming up. In fact, we have just taken on a new part-time education officer to work on a project in collaboration with the Institute of Oriental Studies here in Oxford, and that will be all about early medieval medicine, particularly looking at the scholarly record of a Muslim practitioner and scholar who wrote about the history of medicine. He goes by the name of Isabaya. And that is a literary history of medicine, which is interesting because he draws in poetic accounts as well. Mm. And so the project is all about interpreting this, And we're going to be designing some board games and card games around the theme of the early history of medicine. And we're going to be trying those out in public events as well. So we'll be very interested in participation in that and to get some feedback into the developmental process for those games. So that's one project which is on the horizon. Another, and perhaps a much more ambitious project in some ways, is coming up in the autumn, and our next special exhibition will be all about penicillin and the history of antibiotics. And that, of course, is partly an Oxford story, because the development of penicillin happened very much during wartime Oxford here with a team at the Dunn School of Pathology. And part of that is a well-told story, but some aspects of it are not so well told, and some of the key players, some of the sort of, if you like, the backroom figures, as it were, the laboratory technicians, the penicillin girls, as they're sometimes called, who tended and looked after the cultures of penicillin, which were absolutely essential for the whole process of extraction. Mm. It'll go much wider than that, of course. It will play into current debates about the antibiotics, the overuse of antibiotics, the use of antibiotics in agriculture, and so on. So we're hoping to have quite a wide-ranging programme of public engagement alongside that special exhibition, and of course engagement with schools and sis too.
I was going to say, I remember from doing history at GCSE, the history of medicine was studied extensively, so I imagine it'd be very useful for anyone in years 10 or 11 to come down to the exhibition.
Yes, indeed, yes. We do work with some schools who do the history of medicine for school's history project, GCSE, and so we often support that with surgery and anatomy in the 17th century is one
wonderful
thing that we support,
yes,
there, but also, yes, penicillin and more sort of 20th century medicine.
Brilliant. Fabulous. Well, thank you very much, Chris.
My pleasure.